Welcome to the Daily Flow. Please welcome your host, John Coleman.
Welcome, everyone. Today we're going to talk about a question that was submitted last week. You're all very welcome to submit questions that you'd like me to address or topics you'd like me to discuss. The topic that was suggested is as follows. Is the application of Scrum as per the Scrum Guide too prescriptive? Is the Scrum Guide used as a set of laws you'd need to adhere to? Should the Scrum Guide rather be treated as a guide that gives? I had a very good conversation with Tobias Mayer on my Exagility podcast a few weeks ago. The episode is there for all to listen to on the usual podcast apps. And we talked at length for, I think, nearly 50 minutes about Scrum and the development of Scrum over the years and so on. But I'll just try to give a quick answer to some of these questions. So first of all, I think to answer the question, I think I need to set the stage a little bit. The update to the Scrum Guide in 2020, it was a big change. The Scrum Guide used to be much more prescriptive. Up to 2017, there were suggestions about the three questions. There were only suggestions, but a lot of people interpreted them as something that you should do. What did I do yesterday? What am I doing today? And do I have any impediments? And in the 2020 version, a lot of the prescription is gone. And it really has become more of a guide now than it was. It's kind of left open to interpretation how you would do it. But if you're developing software, I guess, the 2017 guide is kind of still something that you might want to kind of latch onto. But there are a significant number of changes in the 2020 guide, which maybe I'll cover in a different episode. And I do already have a YouTube episode on that from the end of last year. But the 2020 guide is really flexible enough to allow people who are implementing Scrum in software and non-software. It's much more flexible. I think the only software development word that's left is the word developer. And maybe there was an opportunity there to deal with that. And I'm not sure why that step wasn't taken. Maybe that was a bridge too far. I'm not sure. So is the application of Scrum as with the Scrum Guide too prescriptive? It depends what you want, right? So when you're dealing with complexity, you need some kind of empirical approach. You need to be using evidence to help you to decide what to do next. That means looking at data, looking at how customers, end users are responding to whatever you've developed, whether that's marketing or legal work or HR work or software. An empirical approach is advised when you're dealing with unknown unknowns. I'm oversimplifying when I say that. There are a number of different approaches to be empirical. You can use build, measure, learn from the Lean Startup. You can use sense and respond from Lean UX. You can use plan, do, check, act, plan, do, study, act, inspect and adapt in Scrum. There are a number of different approaches. And in the conversation I had with Tobias on the Exagility podcast, we did talk about getting back to the very essence of Scrum around self-managing teams, following the three pillars of transparency, inspection, and adaptation is what we more or less said. And beyond that, really the Scrum Guide is helping you to make sure that that happens. If you decide not to follow aspects of the Scrum Guide, so if you're not doing something that Scrum Guide is expecting you to do, just don't call what you're doing Scrum, just call it something else. The Scrum Guide is really a minimum set of rules and guides, if you like, to help you to understand dealing with complexity. When people start paring back even those basic, barely sufficient rules, we start missing opportunities in terms of dealing with complexity and responding to what's going on in the market. Let's talk about the Scrum Guide. Where I normally start is the three pillars. So if I look at the three pillars in Scrum, they are transparency, inspection, and adaptation. Transparency in terms of having no hidden work, everything's made visible in your product backlog, your sprint backlog similar. Your increment is transparent because it's a done increment, and Scrum is quite strong on that you have a done increment, and there's a definition of done to support that, so we know what that means. And Scrum is also underpinned by the Scrum values. And the Scrum values, there's five of them: focus, openness, courage, commitment, and respect. And when you do well in all of those five values, the end result is trust. So we want to be using an empirical approach based on trust to solve complex problems, or do our best to pay attention to complex problems. So a lot of people talk about 3-5-3-3, you've got the three accountabilities now, they're no longer roles. You've got the three artifacts, as in the product backlog, the sprint backlog, and the increment. And now we've got the commitments to the artifacts as well. The product goal is a commitment to the product backlog. And without a product goal, you're going to struggle with focus. So having a product goal really helps us to keep on track. If you don't know where you're going, you'll end up somewhere else. So there are a number of different techniques for coming up with a product goal, but as such, there's one product goal that the product backlog is focused on. And I think that's a really nice addition to the Scrum Guide. In addition to that, in the sprint backlog, the sprint goal is a commitment to the sprint backlog. And the sprint backlog is essentially the work that we're going to do at this sprint towards the sprint goal, that the sprint goal is hopefully iterating towards a product goal. The sprint goal really helps us to have focus as well. So instead of having a team that really is just doing more stuff, we're really trying to inspire the team. I love the way Dr. Lance Secretan describes the difference between motivation and inspiration. And I'm not talking about people being self-motivated, I'm talking about us trying to motivate other people. He describes motivation as lighting a fire under people, metaphorically, and inspiration as lighting a fire inside people. And so when you have a good sprint goal to aim for on the sprint that's following product goal, it helps to inspire. And I give guidance to product owners on how to develop a good product goal, and also how to help Scrum teams to develop a good sprint goal. In a nutshell, there's no word and there's no commas, as Todd Miller says. So we want to keep it focused. Just to clarify as well, that just because we got a sprint goal doesn't mean that every product backlog item in the sprint backlog has to be for the sprint goal. You could have five items in the sprint, say, and maybe three of them are for the sprint goal. It's the same as well with the product backlog. Not every item has to be for the product goal, because you might be seeding some subsequent product goals as well. So I think the sprint goal it's mandatory in Scrum. I think it's really nice, keeps the team focused. Instead of the product backlog just being a list of stuff, instead of the sprint backlog just being more stuff that we're doing within a sprint, it's trying to inspire the team to do really good work. Then we've got the three accountabilities in Scrum. So project management is dissipated across three accountabilities. And really, it's product management, I suppose, rather than project management, because a project is like an artificial construct to get money to get some work done. In Scrum, what we try to encourage is that you might actually have projects barcoded through the product backlog. So it's really good that you've got a product owner who's worried about maximizing value. You've got developers who essentially commit to the definition of done and the sprint goal. And the Scrum Master who's on the hook for the effectiveness of the Scrum team. That's a new addition in the 2020 guide. The Scrum Master is now essentially on the hook for the performance of the team. Product owner making sure that the team is working on the right stuff, and the developers, cross-functional self-managing team who've got all the skills needed to do the job, and they're kind of left to their own devices to do that. So I think that's really cool. I don't know what you want to get rid of there. So sprint planning is very useful. If you don't do sprint planning, well, how do you know what you want to get done? And I'm not saying the plans will be right or anything, but it's useful. having a sprint review is very useful to get feedback on, are we doing the right thing? And in Scrum, we've got a definition of done. And in the definition of done in the 2020 guide, instead of being potentially releasable, which would still be the case if it was software, but more generally, the term we're using now is valuable, useful, and usable. And that's kind of like the definition of done is kind of like a checklist for how we do things around here, having some product quality considerations, some technical quality considerations. So the sprint review is a great opportunity to collaborate on what to do next with the stakeholders. And the stakeholders, just like the Scrum team, they should be committing to the Scrum values as well and to the three pillars of Scrum to support empiricism. So I wouldn't want to get rid of the sprint review. It's really important to have a retrospective to do continuous improvement. I did an episode last week on continuous improvement and some tips on, you know, how to make that a bit easier. Product backlog refinement isn't mandatory in single team Scrum. It is in Nexus and less in multi-team Scrum. And product backlog refinement is really encouraged in the 2020 guide, which I really like. So I don't know why you'd want to get rid of that. If you don't do product backlog refinement regularly, your sprint planning is going to be very difficult and probably taking the full time box of 8 hours for a 1 month sprint. So I'd rather do regular product backlog refinement, frankly, on a weekly basis, if not more often. So the developers are almost bored of these items, and it's a great opportunity to meet customers and end users and clarify what problems they're trying to solve. So I really wouldn't want to get rid of that either, because I wouldn't want a situation where stakeholders turn up at a sprint review and they said, well, why did you build that? We tried it out last year. It doesn't work. I mean, we could have found that out beforehand by involving the stakeholders in product backlog refinement. And it doesn't have to be building something fully. It could be doing some experiment as well, doing some really low-cost experiment. So product backlog, list of things to be done, product goal, the commitment to the product backlog, sprint planning, deciding what we're going to do in the sprint with a supported by a sprint goal that's now actually in the sprint backlog. Three accountabilities of product owner, developer, and Scrum Master, all working under the three pillars of Scrum and the five Scrum values along with the stakeholders, reviewing a done increment at the sprint review. And you could even have a situation where the increment has been released already. Actually, during the sprint, you might have, that's another change in the 2020 guide, that there's at least one increment in the sprint. You can have more than one. Why would you want to not have a definition of done where people can actually understand what they're looking at? It's not like there's an element of doubt about what they're looking at. It's like, okay, they know it's tested properly. It's ready for release, being transparent. So the three artifacts, the product backlog with its product goal commitment, the sprint backlog with its sprint goal commitment, the increment with its definition of done commitment, the three roles, the events of sprint planning where you decide what you're going to do in the sprint towards a goal that's hopefully iterated towards a product goal, a daily scrum to check in how we're doing against the sprint goal and seeing if we can do anything to help, doing a review with your stakeholders, doing a retrospective. I don't know what I take out of Scrum really, but there are other approaches. So if you don't like some of these things, I guess, and you think, well, it doesn't really apply to you. If those parts of Scrum that you don't like happen to be optional, then good for you. But if they're part of the core of it, I would really treat the Scrum guide almost like a set of rules. I know it's called a Scrum guide, but if the language is vague, take that as guidance. If it's quite firm, take that as a rule. And I'm oversimplifying now, but you can look at other options. Complexity is coming out towards the end of this month. It's like Scrum, except it doesn't have a Scrum Master, doesn't have a product owner, but it has other ways to compensate for that. It's more designed for non-software and teams who struggle to deliver something within 30 days. If you can do something within 30 days, why not use Scrum? It's available on the market and so on. But of course, the decision about whether you use Scrum or not isn't really down to whether it's suitable. It's also down to the belief system as well of the people on the team. So do the people on the team actually, would they really support it? If you recommended a Scrum to a team, but you kind of knew that straight away when you turn your back, they're going to do something else. Well, you know, well, why not do something else then? Maybe they just need to meet every day. So just be careful about treating the Scrum guide as something that you can pick and choose from. I would struggle to find anything in the Scrum guide that I don't actually need. But that's just my opinion. Thank you, everyone.
got a question for us? Leave a voice message at anchor.fm/dailyflow/message and we'll feature it as well as provide you with an answer.